Hey folks, it's Brandon. How's it going?
And I'm David. Welcome to Late to the Party, a podcast where we investigate and break down the 1001 albums you must hear before you die. The 2016 edition, edited by Robert Dimery.
You continue to be so lucky, because now you get to listen to two rapidly aging millennials tell you what's cool or not cool. Every week we'll listen to an album from the list and break down why it's worth the listen or purchase or pass. Today we're discussing number 238, Harry Nilsson's Nilsson Schmilsson.
Oh man, Brandon, I'm really excited to talk about this album.
I know, you've been pumped for so long.
Yeah, and I'm not going to claim that I wasn't late to the party on it, because again, like, the theme here is I'm late to the party on literally everything. So, but then part of the game is that I play out that I'm not.
Right,
that's how you
course.
Survive to be pretentious, right? So you have to just like act like, you know, and if you hadn't heard about it, it's not worth hearing about. So
right, of course.
All right, yeah. Before we get to that, what new music you've been listening to?
Okay, are you ready for this? It's not new, because I don't really listen to new music, obviously, because we started this podcast. But I've been listening to Daft Punk's Random Access Memories from 2013. Do you know that album?
Yes.
So our conversation about Joni Mitchell and how she hired those session musicians, it got me... It got me thinking about these other bands that have taken similar approaches. And so Daft Punk was known for producing electronic music that was heavily motivated by or engineered by technology. And then with Random Access Memories, which might be on this list, I'm not even sure if it is, they did an about face and decided to completely reinvent themselves. So they went out and got these studio musicians from the 70s and 80s who were used to playing the same thing over and over again, but playing it so tightly that it almost seemed like there was a machine playing it. So they found a way to sort of find a middle passage between their way of operating and this, the sort of 70s, 80s studio recording. So for instance, there's a track on their album called Giorgio by Moroder. And Giorgio Moroder is the producer, songwriter who made Donna Summer a star, right? He's the guy who did Love to Love You, I Feel Love. And there's a song called Giorgio by Moroder on that album where he basically talks about his biography and then helps them produce a song. It's like track two or three or something. So I started listening to Random Access Memories.
Should this be our, what we actually do is like only investigate albums that are the like quote unquote turning point or about face or, you know, reinvention of a group? Because it seems to be a trend that we keep incidentally.
My lazy hypothesis is that the reason these albums end up on the list is because that's what they've done. They have in some way changed a genre or changed the artist's perspective, or they were going through hell and the album saved them from that particular hell. But there's something transformational about those pieces.
We do love that, right? We love that, especially with, we love comeback stories. Yes. Comeback stories. Like, what, like Robert Downey Jr. Oh my gosh. Or the Mickey Rourke short-lived comeback.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I'm back. I'm going to go.
Yeah, no, like I'm going to keep doing what I was doing before, so whatever.
What was the big Oscar-nominated performance?
The Wrestler.
The Wrestler. I haven't seen it.
It's pretty good.
I did see him in Iron Man, speaking of Robert Downey Jr. That one wasn't great.
I couldn't tell if that was his character or he like literally like couldn't give two shits about being there.
That may have, in fact, been his I'm going to go moment. The end of the comeback, as it were.
He's like, this is what I have to do to be back in Hollywood and be loved, is to do this crap for this stupid movie. It was such a stupid movie. And he didn't even really get to be, like, his talking partner was a parrot for, like, half of it. And then...
What?
He had, like, a bird. He kept saying it in Russian accent, bird. Give me my bird.
Obviously my bird. Not a memorable experience for me.
No, and Sam Rockwell, he got to play off Sam Rockwell, which is cool, but other than that, like, he was like by himself working with blowtorches. It was so stupid.
Was that the same Iron Man that had Ben Kingsley in it? I know we're getting way off base here.
No, that's like that's Iron Man 3, which is vastly superior.
Okay, well, back to the point, you people are here. David, what are you listening to these days?
All of Nilsson's discography.
he went down a rabbit hole.
I just went down a rabbit hole and was like, oh my God, I love it. I love hearing all, and then, you know, because this is his seventh album.
You're the Nilsson expert.
It's like seventh or eighth album already, right? And he's a machine. Like, he just puts out one or two albums a year for like every year for like 10 years.
Until Nilsson Schmilsson.
And then, well, no, then he put out Son of Smilsham like the next
Oh, that's
year, and
too
then
much.
he, no, he continued, goes into the 70s till like 76. He's putting out an album, if not two albums, every single year, all the way through like 76.
Oh, that's true.
So I'm like going through all of it, and he has a kids album that comes out right before
Oh, yeah, The
this,
Point.
The Point. And you know what?
I like that album.
It's me and my arrow. That song slaps. That is a great song. It is
What
catchy. It's wonderful. It's about him. It's about imaginary boy and his dog. It's awesome. I love it. It's so. That's the stuff that reminds me of. You ever listen to, the Beach Boys Smile album? It reminds me a lot of that. It's like playful children music, but also it's pop, right? It's pop music.
Here's a question for you, because I think your Beach Boys knowledge is it far outseeds mine. Was Smile the album that Brian Wilson effectively went crazy while, or he snapped while recording it, and then he came back to it years and years later and took
And
it on
it had
tour?
like had Good Vibrations on it, and but they use it as a single, and
Right.
then he comes back to it, I don't know, 2008.
Oh, that's the album with Heroes and Villains on it. I love that song.
Yes. Yeah, so he comes back with that like
Yes.
2007, 2008,
Yep.
I think
Takes it
it's
on tour.
right around there. And he takes it on tour. So here's a fun fact. I was in town because I went to school in New York, came back in town from college, and he was playing in St. Louis. So I bought tickets like months in advance. I was like, I'm gonna go see, it's gonna be so great. And then about a month before the concert, the White Stripes announced a concert the exact same night. And I went to the White Stripes concert and sold
Oh,
my tickets to Smile. And
David.
I saw, it was the White, first of all, the White Stripes weren't around very much longer after that anyway. And
And
it was in
Brian Wilson
Fox.
is touring every year.
But it's Brian Wilson like nostalgia tour. And it's not like it's
Sure.
it was the White Stripes in their prime,
Fair
you know,
enough.
like this was like their bet, and it was the Fox Theater versus seeing them in, I think Brian Wilson was playing at like in a downtown arena or something.
Probably playing at Scott Trade or
So
something. What was then
yeah,
Scott
or
Trade?
whatever it's, or Kiel Center is how I still call it, because I refuse to
Because
update my
it's because you're old.
knowledge of Kiel Center. So yeah, so I don't regret it, but there is part of me that like, oh, there's an alternate timeline out there somewhere where I went to go see Smile, and
You're a different human.
I yeah
Maybe in that
yeah
alternate timeline, you and I then never meet, and then we never have a chance to create this podcast. Or an opportunity to talk about Harry Nilsson's Nilsson Schmilsson, which we haven't mentioned in, 5 minutes. So maybe we now's a great time to take a break. I'm gonna grab
Yep.
some more cold brew, and when we come
Oh my
back,
God.
we'll chat about album context and historical setup and all that jazz. All right, folks, stay with us.
All right, welcome back to Late to the Party podcast. We are gonna continue our talk. Actually, initiate our talk about Harry Nilsson's 1971
Oh, is that why we're
album,
here?
Nilsson Schmilsson, which is sounds like the most serious album of all time. So, which I think is a perfect title. And we should probably mention at this point that we are wearing bathrobes, like the cover of Harry Nilsson, because apparently he could give a crap about the album cover or the titles. Honestly, he like doesn't care. Like if you look at any of his album titles, Nilsson Schmilsson seems like a joke. Then the next one after this is The Son of Schmilsson, and then The Point, Sandman. That's the way it is. Like there's just like basic. Like I don't think he really cares. Some of them are just called like Harry. Like that's one. It's just like I don't know, man. I can't be bothered. Just take the picture. Slap a title on it. It doesn't matter.
You do get the sense
Which.
that he's trying to shirk expectations at every turn. And so if he's
Yeah.
making this as you'll eventually talk about, the sort of Baroque pop music, and it has this lushness to it, that has to be contrasted with the sort of DIY album cover or the seemingly random song titles. It just doesn't matter. What matters is the
No.
music.
And honestly, at some point, I don't even know. Well, we'll get into that, I guess. So he becomes a big star in a way where he sings somebody else's song, but he does a really good job of it. Everybody's talking, and it gets prominently featured years later on the movie with John Voight and Dustin Hoffman, Midnight Cowboy, which if you're like, now you're like, oh, now I know that song that played like 1,000 times throughout, which also, that movie isn't that great. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it. I've only seen stills of Dustin Hoffman's character apparently dying. I don't know. I also,
that's the one where he goes, I'm walking here. I'm walking.
Oh, yeah, and he pounds on the thing. Yeah. I just pounded on the table because obviously you can see that. Here's my challenge to most people who've heard that song before. I dare you to sing more than everybody's talking about me. What happens after that line? No one knows that song.
Oh, no, but you get the guitar at the beginning. It's like a nice traveling song. You know,
sorry,
car road song.
Sorry, do that again. Sounds like Deliverance.
Well,
oh, fair.
So yeah, it became really big, and I think he won best vocal performance for that Grammy. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, on a larger scale, if you're wondering who this Nielsen is and how he fits into at least the 70s songwriting landscape, if you're a Beatles fan and the Beatles break up in 1970 and you're suddenly You need a particular kind of sound that might replace or fill that void. Nielsen, who has been anointed by all four Beatles, he sort of fills that void sonically. At least temporarily, he does. Right? Is that fair to say?
Definitely. And if you feel like, oh, how come I've never heard of Harry Nielsen? You're right. It's crazy. We'll get into that too, but he was... In 1968, Beatles came to America. They interviewed him, like, oh, who are you listening to? Who's your favorite American band? And they all said Nielsen.
Right.
Like, he's the best. And they asked him again later in the day to see if they would change it. Nope, Nielsen, he's the best. Well, it seems like they were just so they were best friends, and he was best friends with primarily Ringo Starr, who ended up being his best man at his wedding. But I mean, he's his friends with all of the Beatles,
right?
And they were friends with his kids afterwards too. Like, still to this day, like they keep in touch,
right?
And
so I think it's fair to say that he sort of has the distinction of being from that particular period. Every classic rock artist's favorite musician that nobody else today has really heard of, right? He's like the musician's musician. They all worship him in a certain sense. But that typically means that you probably dropped the ball somewhere else because you could have been more popular or more widespread and you weren't. So it's sort of a double-edged sword, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things, too, about why maybe he wasn't as popular, even though he couldn't have gotten a bigger boost from them, you know, championing his records, is that he refused to go on tour.
Yeah.
He refused to play live. He never went on tour and never played live. Like, only like maybe the first album he ever did, and he hated it.
Yeah,
and he never did it ever again.
I've got complicated feelings about that, if you don't mind.
I would love to hear it.
So we know from the documentary, the excellent documentary that both of us have now seen, it's called Who's Harry Nielsen. It's available for free on Tubi TV, by the way. But we know, based on the documentary, that there's this disastrous live performance from earlier in the 60s that effectively drives him off the stage, right? And I know he comes back late 80s, early 90s, because his accountant basically drains all of his bank accounts, and he needs to perform live just to make money because he's not recording albums that anyone cares about anymore. But so I'm going to argue against myself here for a second, because I've got major problems with him not touring at the height of his career. Keith Richards, whose name I'll say a lot over the next couple weeks, he's fond of saying that songs aren't really songs. That is, we don't really know what we have from songs until we've presented them to multiple live audience, right? It's like workshopping it if you are in the theater. And so previewing that for your famous friends who do adore you, for me, that doesn't really count. So sometimes I wonder how much better might his catalog have been if he had toured, if he had workshopped those songs in front of crowds who also loved him, right? Like, at this time, he's popular, and people, they buy his albums, but he refuses to go on tour and indulge that other part of the performance of an artist. So
he hates feedback. He refuses to hear any feedback. He discusses
nothing.
Right,
I argue against myself. If he's just limited to the studio, he has to be perfect. If you're not going to go out and sell that album, if you're not going to campaign for that album in front of paying audiences, that album had better be damn good. And Nils Schmilson was damn good. It's nearly perfect, right? So that's, I'm conflicted.
He doesn't have, like, the Beatles went totally studio, right? But that was right. For a lot of reasons. But they also made, like, you know, the greatest music ever made.
Right, and they were also putting out longer, I mean, after they stopped touring, you've got the White Album, which is really, maybe too long, some might say. But they give you this output that sort of makes up for the fact that they're not touring anymore. They're also making music videos at that time. Right?
Oh, so yeah.
Hello, Goodbye, Paperback Writer, things like that. And they send those out into the world instead of actually touring. Thinking about Harry Nilsson, though, one of the things that sticks out to me is just I've never heard someone who harmonizes so effortlessly and more convincingly than Harry Nilsson. Maybe Marvin Gaye on the I Want You album, right? Like the dexterity and the range of his voice just totally knocks me out. I've never seen anything like that. And I remember from that documentary, someone said, there was a review where a person said, oh, his the album was great, but he should really list the background singers, right? Because they were amazing. And the person who's giving the interview says what they didn't realize is that Harry Nilsson sang all of those parts. Because he's got a 4-octave range.
It's insane. And he also plays the guitar, plays the piano. Like he's playing a ton of those instruments on there too.
Right.
So, which, you know, I kept thinking, I'm like, all right, because he's constantly considered or, you know, labeled a fifth Beatle, whatever that moniker is. But if he had a band that like kept him in check,
yeah,
could he have made more and better pieces? I mean, not to say like the fact that this, when we get to like MVPs of the album, I have mine, but of why Nilsson Schmilsson.
No. Yeah.
Nilsson Schmilsson.
I'll say that someone who has a mild speech impediment, it's not been the most enjoyable when they say, hey, Brandon, what's the next episode? I'll go, it's Nilsson Schmilsson.
But he just seems to it's on a whim almost of every musical decision he makes.
Yeah.
He's like, before he even does this album, he doesn't really have, his career is, he won a Grammy for the one song, had 2 or 3 or more albums, one of them being just covers of Randy Newman. So, like, I don't think this is commercially viable. And he's like, I don't care. Do you listen to Randy Newman's the best? Like, I am going to do an entire album.
Sounds like a
album.
Mad TV sketch.
Yeah. It's like, that is a poor decision. He's like, no, I'm doing it.
Doing it.
And then the same thing happened after Schmilsson is son of Schmilsson. And he's like, nah, I'm just going to do whatever I want. And then after that, he's like, you know what? My voice is the best it's ever been. Ever.
Let's do
it
live.
Let's do American standards, song standards, and sing all the classics. And they're like, yeah, usually you do that when you're like 65, like when your career is over and you do like a Christmas album and a, you know.
A Christmas album. Welcome to my home.
For everybody to love. And he's like, nah, I'm going to do it now. It's like, you're like, couldn't be, have a better, like a peak at your career any higher.
Yeah, this is not the time, Harry.
He doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's making movies with Ringo Starr. He's doing a children's album right before Schmilsson. It's ping ponging all over the place. Like,
it is.
He doesn't care. Which I can't tell if this is like genius or 100% self destruction and not caring.
I think it's self destruction. I think it is. You know what I'm realizing now? I'm realizing that my first experience with Harry Nilsson happened without me knowing it. So
well, you, I think a lot of people,
yeah,
for sure.
Well, if you've ever seen the movie Practical Magic, you know that his song Coconut, which is on Nilsson Schmilsson, it dominates the margarita scene where there's Diane Weiss, Stocker Channing, who I fucking love so much, Abigail Bartlett from The West Wing, Sandra Bullock, Nicole Kidman, they're all dancing around their kitchen getting totally wasted on margaritas, and the song that carries that entire scene is Coconut. And that's always been my favorite scene. But it sort of makes sense that song would be in that scene because that movie, that particular scene, it's all about regret and fear, indulging appetites in the face of the hell that is surely coming, which makes it perfect for Harry Nilsson.
If we're going to get into like his songwriting and melody, well, we should, I think.
Yeah.
Which is what his standout is. His greatest asset and instrument is his voice, for sure. He's a three and a half, four octave range, which is crazy, which makes total sense that Mariah Carey covers one without of the songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, Without You. Which, well, we'll wait till the hot takes.
Yeah.
And I got I'm so excited. So, so
David's so giddy. Like, I wish you could see this.
He continually does stupid shit to like see if almost like get me in trouble. Do something to me. Like he would
do something.
Apparently he you know what I mean. Like he was a notorious partier, did drugs and was an alcoholic, and you know they had on the documentary they kept on talking to all of his friends like what's his face from the Monkees, Mickey Dolan,
yeah,
about oh, Harry's at my door. Let's go. Yeah, let's go. You want to go hang out? And he's like, oh, God. Like, you don't know what day you're coming back. Which yeah. Everyone said across the board, you don't know what day you're coming back. Like, what time? What day?
Jimmy Webb's wife's like, oh, not Harry. When are you going to be home? Oh, not Harry.
Yeah. Or what city you're going to end up in. And... it seems like you just, like, that was like, oh, that's hilarious. It's like 60s, 70s, that's what you expect from rock stars. But like, oh my God, like him and John Lennon would go, the famous story about him, infamous story about how him and John Lennon were like drinking, what were those drinks?
Brandy, like Alexander's.
Brandy Alexander's, yeah. Which that's going to be my new drink.
They're so good.
Milk and brandy. And they got wasted. They went to a Smothers Brothers come back to. Have you ever seen a Smothers Brothers episode?
No, I have not. Like, I've seen like clips of things, but not.
It's sketch comedy set. Honestly, it's so much about. It's like watching The Daily Show now, but in like 50 years. And be okay. Like, I don't know what they're referring to.
Yeah.
These are such inside politician jokes. Anyway, they heckled them during their lives so much that they both got kicked out of the place. Jeez. John Lennon and Harry Nilsson. Like, that's hilarious. And apparently, Harry punched a waitress or something. Like, it's like this whole. It's like this whole thing. It's like, do you even know who I am? I'm John Lennon. They're like, get out of here, you drunken fool.
Yeah, before we get into fave tracks, other things like that, you know, if listeners are looking for context, if they're wondering who, in terms of contemporary artists, line up with the Nilsson.
Yeah, I know, right?
I can't do it. It's probably also the cold brew. If you're looking for someone who embodies that same ethos, I think Father John Misty, at least in the I Love You.
Oh, absolutely.
The I Love You Honey Bear. I know I wrote it down somewhere. The I Love You Honey Bear era.
Too.
It's John Misty, right?
Me too.
Like style, vocal delivery, vocal range, the sort of fuck you, I don't care attitude. I'm going to do exactly what I want and you're going to love it because I'm smarter than you are. All of that fits into, down to where he lives when he's in LA, right? They all stay at the hotel, at the chateau, so.
I'm so happy you brought that up because I had noted that same thing. The first time I listened to Without You, his version of it,
yeah.
I honestly thought he was trolling everyone. Like, I thought it was a joke version of the song where he's just like, it's like a whole joke. And if you listen to it ironically, then you're like, oh, this is hilarious. Like, he is super talented, giving it his all, and basically being like, fuck you. Like, I am making fun of this of ballads. And also, I can do it better than anyone because my voice is the best in pop music at that time. The first couple of times listening to it, I'm like, I thought it was, like, funny. I thought the song was funny.
Yeah.
Until you start going through his discography and looking at just how heartfelt his songwriting is.
Yeah.
And how...
it's like you listen to something December 1941 and it just breaks your heart.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The other thing about John Misty is, have you seen him live before?
No.
He's incredible. But Brayden and I went and saw him a couple of years ago. And the public persona of someone like Misty is that he's a misogynist, he's a chauvinist. But then it's also possible because he is a brilliant mind, he's totally making fun of you and you don't even know it. And so you're conflicted and you've got this beautiful music. And you don't know what to do with any of those contrasting feelings, so you're just sort of dumbfounded, and you just let it all wash over you, and then it's over. You know, it's really unsettling.
It's still working, and you like, and there's a, maybe this is just me, but like, you want his approval in some way. Like, I'm buying your music. Yes. I support you. Please think I'm cool.
See me too. See me. Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. So when we come back, we'll talk to you a bit more about a couple more particular tracks, specifically why listening to this album is also like listening to Abbey Road have a baby. right? Like it's like McCartney's melodic sensibilities, it's Lennon's lyrical taste, and it's got vocals that completely outdo either of them at their absolute best. So stay with us. Late to the Party, I'll be back in just one sec. Welcome back, folks. Before we get into a couple of the tracks that we found to be our favorites, least favorites, MVPs, things like that, on the break, David and I were talking about the sort of 70s rock myths, and we realized that two of those myths, or not myths, but two of those stories actually converge. So we know that for
like
the long...
Legends.
Yeah, they are like legends, yeah. Because they exist, but we're also not quite sure of the total veracity of it. There's a bit of apocrypha in some of those things. There's an SAT word for you.
Hey,
but
we're
English
teachers, by the way.
We've been talking a lot about the sort of Beatles influence on Nielsen and how much they loved him. We know that after the Beatles broke up, Paul McCartney and John Lennon didn't really speak to each other. But we also know they got back together one more time in the mid-70s. We think it's 74. And the last time that they actually jammed together and recorded was during a Harry Nilsson recording session. And that recording session also included Stevie Wonder, who was playing drums. Paul McCartney was on drums, Wonder was on keyboards, Nilsson was on keyboards, and maybe John was on guitar and vocals or something like that. But so everyone, or a lot of people who are obsessed with that era of music, they know about, or at least tangentially are aware of, that particular night. What they don't know, and what you and I sort of just realized, is that's also the same night that Harry Nilsson blew out his vocal cords, where he and John were trying to sort of one-up each other and decide who could have the raspiest, graveliest, roughest vocal delivery. And in doing so, he blew something in his vocal cords, and he talks later on about, or he confesses, I should say, later on, to there actually being blood on the microphone. But he doesn't tell anybody that this has happened because he is A, probably shocked, and B, probably embarrassed. What some people opine, there's another ACT word for you, is that he was doing this self-consciously, because we've already sort of started to unpeel the insecurities and the sense of doubt that he had, you know, in terms of not touring and things like that. And some people think that he was subconsciously trying to self-destruct by ridding the world and himself of the gift that everyone thought made him who he was. It's interesting that that happened when he's in front of two of his greatest idols and biggest fans. There's something, it's tragic, it's ironic, I guess irony is the unexpected, but it's interesting that he's with two of his biggest supporters, and that's the night that he permanently damages his moneymaker.
Have you listened to any of his albums post vocal break?
You know, I've only listened to Nilsson Schmilsson completely. That's the only album I've listened to completely through, for that reason. I don't want to hear him struggling to hit notes that he was hitting effortlessly. And I don't love him the same way that other people do, so I don't necessarily have the need or the desire to go down the rabbit hole of his discography.
It's a lot of... His voice is I mean, it's there's no... You wouldn't even know the same guy at some points.
Yeah.
It's a little gravelly.
It's sad.
It is.
It's fascinating, and also, yeah, it's just sad for me. But anywho.
What you're thinking, too, in terms of music history, usually that's when the musician dies. You know what I mean? That's the end of their life. What could have been? It's like, no, he lived for another 25 years and put out albums and stuff with this limitation, when that doesn't really... I don't know of another example of an artist injuring themselves and still playing music, or it's usually they just die, right? If they have all that promise, it's like a plane crash or a car crash or a drug overdose or something.
And here
it's like, it's... Oof.
It's not like Kurt Cobain committed suicide or River Phoenix overdosing. Was it the 27 Club? It's not that,
Jimi Hendrix,
right?
Janis Joplin,
sudden snuffing out.
Right.
So for me, I, like you, his legacy is always blighted by what could have been. And not because he died, but because he's this brilliant mind whose personal demons motivate him to slowly self-destruct over a 25-year period. It's terribly sad to me. But that's not why you're here, because you want to have fun. So we should probably get into tracks. So David, you want to?
Okay. So, before we talk about specifically the tracks, the producer of this album was I believe he was first on this album, because Harry kind of picked and chose. I haven't had any cold brew either. He chose his producers kind of willy-nilly at points. And this time he chose Richard Perry, a big-time producer at this point. And Richard Perry was like, with you, Harry, we can make a Beatles album. So we're going to go into the studio and we're going to make a Beatles album, 1970, 71. And it's serious. If you listen to, which you should, because we're all obviously suggesting listen to this album.
Definitely.
You will hear Abbey Road. You will hear... honestly, you'll hear a lot of Beach Boys. I heard a lot of Beach Boys in these songs.
Especially in Beach Boys. Not harmonies.
Oh my gosh. And honestly, Randy Newman. There's a lot of Randy Newman in this. Yeah. And that's a good thing, because I don't hate Randy Newman, at least in my mind, he's been just like reduced to that one scene in Family Guy in the apocalypse. It's like the apple tree and Randy Newman, and he sings Everything That You Do.
I would also encourage you to look at Will Sasso's impersonations of Randy Newman on Mad TV, because they're epic. All I see right now is Will Sasso dressed as Randy Newman at a piano going, Star Wars, Star Wars, and that's it. Anywho.
Brandon... Do you want me to share my favorite track first? Okay. So I chose two. Because, yes, I love Gotta Get Up. And honestly, part of the reason why I love that song so much is, yes, Russian Doll. If you saw Russian Doll on Netflix, it gets played multiple times every episode for the whole season, first season, right?
Because
it's one of my favorite movie tropes of all time, which is the Groundhog's Day trope, where I repeat a day. I will sit and watch literally anything that has that trope. I love the repetition of a day and then like trying it out. I don't know why that and like magical cleanup scenes.
Have you seen Palm Springs on Hulu?
Not yet. Don't worry.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I'm going to see it. Don't worry.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite tropes. That and magical cleanup scenes, you know, when they like Mary Poppins or like Harry Potter, when they like flick a switch or whatever and
things. So like, you know, anyway. Bewitched?
Yeah, sure. Or okay. Fantasia, you know, I don't know. Anyway, so Driving Along is a really great track. It's the second track after Gotta Get Up. But the Moonbeam song is my favorite.
Yeah.
It wasn't originally when I first listened to this a couple times, but then it became something. The lyrics are so beautiful. It's like haiku, you know, where it's like beautiful about nature, but also something bigger. And he also uses the word crap in it, but he says, and you're like, no, that makes sense. But usually if you're like having this lovely, beautiful song and melody and you curse, it seems out of place, right?
Right.
No, I don't know.
No, but
then he
agree. Says
it, and then like the description of the word and crap on a fence, you're like, you don't remember, but I don't know, he pulls it off. So it feels like a poetic lullaby, I guess, and I really enjoyed it a lot. That's my favorite. What's your favorite?
It's also my favorite, and I imagine one day, probably in the next couple of minutes, you and I will strongly disagree on tracks. But here we're agreed, and here's why I dig the Moonbeam song. The lyrics they're meandering. They're not unfocused or pointless. I think it's quite the opposite, actually. But there's no rush. You know, the song is sort of floats, it questions, sort of gently prods. And it's sort of like what you were saying about the haiku element of it. It's a surprisingly interesting way of approaching elements of life that we'd otherwise consider mundane, right? So when I was listening to it, I was thinking, this is the kind of song that you play after midnight. It's a song you play after the party is broken up and the only people left are like your best friends. You know, maybe you're capping the night off with a few White Russians because you're just not ready to call a night. Side note.
Or what's the new one?
What is the new one? Oh, Brandy Alexander's.
Brandy Alexander's, yeah. It's the new White Russian.
But here's a little, listeners, here's a side note for you. If you are ever lucky enough to meet the man, the legend, Dave Records, ask him to make you a White Russian, okay? The man's a goddamn artist. It's really a thing to behold. Anyway, What we have in Moonbeam, it's a series of unanswered questions that stand in contrast to the otherwise sort of like undisturbed, smooth, you called it a lullaby, warmth of the melody. It's just one, have you ever blah, blah, blah. There's no answer. It's never actually resolved. So you have you ever blah, 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 have you ever yada, yada. And we never actually get an answer to that question.
Isn't it grammatically one sentence?
Yeah, it's just one meandering sentence.
Yeah, I love it.
Grammatically, we would call it a loose sentence. Just keeps going. We would. But I dig that contrast, right? Oh, this is actually really, it's a pleasant song. It's soothing. Sure, but it's also got this dangling question out there that's not responded to by anybody else. So when the song ends, it's actually not complete. And I love that. It's sort of unsuspecting, I guess. You don't see it coming. That's why it's my favorite.
Wow, we agreed on that. Well, yeah. So my least favorite, which I'm assuming is what we're going to disagree on.
Yeah.
I thought Jump Into the Fire was my least favorite. It felt like, this is why I wrote, felt like a Deep Purple song. You know, it felt like something that was like a standard 70s. Like, this is what's happening right now in the 70s. You know, like, just kind of like a, we're going to rock nonsense. I don't know. It was just like, the song feels like I don't ever want to listen to it ever again. But yeah. that's the only song on this album where I don't really care for. So
is Jump Into the Fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't dislike it. I dislike Gotta Get Up.
I know.
And I dislike it for reasons that I've otherwise praised him for in the past. So to me, it sounds like someone took McCartney's portion of A Day in the Life. Woke mm-hmm. up, get out of bed, dragged a comb across my head.
See, but I thought that I found that in Driving Along was that part of it.
Yeah. Okay. I see that. But I don't. The lyrics seem nostalgic and sort of wistful of this wild youth, of carousing and drinking. You know, I'm gonna be late. But he's nostalgic for a period that for him is really just getting started. He's not this grizzled old person who's nostalgic looking back and saying, oh, I was a wild youth and now I'm this. This is him at the beginning of that. I don't buy it, I guess. I dig the music. I do dig the music. I don't buy the lyrics. For me, it's a track that could have been either, perhaps it was, if it came different in terms of sequencing of the title of the tracks themselves, I might feel differently about it. But out of the gates, I don't like it. That's my least favorite track. When do you consider the best time to listen to this album?
All the time. Listen to it all the time. There's no bad spot for it. I think, honestly, because of the range of songs, there's like there's slow songs, there's fast songs, there's rock and roll, there's ballads, there's everything that I think that it's also, it's a pop album too. So you can put this on at a party. I think it would have a really good control over the mood, you know what I mean? It's up and downs, and I think it's really nice.
So, you know, Braden and I host that fancy party every year.
Uh-huh.
Not this year, because we don't want to be responsible for people contracting a terrible disease and dying.
I've heard about that, yeah.
But this is no time for pandemic talk. But if I played that at our cocktail party, I think it would fit in quite nicely. Okay. Otherwise, I like listening to it in the morning. Setting aside what I said about Moonbeam, I like listening to it. It could be because my second favorite song is Early in the Morning.
It's super good.
It feels soothing to me in that way.
So do you own it on vinyl? Would you own it on vinyl?
I don't currently own it on vinyl, and I struggle with this one more so than I should, because it's, you know, just a question. But I don't think I would own it on vinyl. I'll take it back. In the same way that you said, if someone bought Hajira for you, you would gladly accept it and be happy to receive it. That's how I feel about Nielsen Schmielsen. I'm not so captured by the entirety of the product that I have to own it on vinyl. Will I listen to it a couple times a year? Probably. And will I be giddy while I'm listening to it? Definitely. But I don't think if someone said, pick any album you want, that's the one you got to buy on vinyl, I'm not sure that's going to be top five for me.
I got it immediately for researching this. And yeah. I was like, why don't I own this? And then I had a gift card that was just burning a hole in my pocket for I've had since Christmas. So, and I'm really bad about gift cards. Like, I have to plan it out that I spend the exact amount on the gift card or closest to without going over. And so, like, trying to figure out, do I really want this? And I fill my card and empty it, online all the time. But I was like, I'm doing it. Went to Vintage Vinyl, did my curbside pickup, and I don't regret it. It's great. I love it.
And I would never begrudge someone buying that album either. I just and you know what? Because I'm such a goof, I'll probably say, you know, Brayden, I feel like I gotta buy. I screwed up. I gotta go buy Nielsen Schmielsen. But at the moment, I'm thinking there are other things that I want in my collection before I get to that album. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, so same with me and Joni, right? It was like, if someone gave it to me, I would be like, great, awesome, thank you so much, but I'm not
And
doing it.
honestly, thinking more about it now, I totally shat on Gotta Get Up. It wasn't which song do you hate? It was what's your least favorite track on the album? And that's my least favorite track because it's not a bad song. It's just not a song that I totally dig as much as the others.
Fair
So
enough.
I feel like I should qualify that. I don't want to be rude or, disingenuous.
All right, well, who is your MVP then? Again, just in case you're new to the MVP has to be other than the obvious. So it's not the main face of the album. Someone behind the scenes, maybe.
Well, I know what you're gonna say, so I won't steal your thunder on that one. I'm gonna make it a two-parter. I'll in the same way that we talked about Joni being, is it the tunings? Is it the band? Is it her vocal delivery? Is it the rhythm guitar? I'm gonna say the MVP of the album is the or are the harmonies that Nielsen produces. That's what I'm gonna say.
Love it.
Because he's doing that without background singers. He's writing those harmonies himself. He is sonically deciding how they fit into the musical arrangements that he's writing himself. And it sounds like he's got a doo-wop group behind him making those things happen. Or it sounds like he's brought Brian Wilson into the studio, which he didn't.
Yeah.
And he's reproduced the Beach Boys harmony, which I find kind of unbelievable. So he's my If we're talking about main MVP that appears throughout the entirety of the album, I'm gonna go with his harmonies. Lesser known, I'm gonna go with the horn section, which we talked about briefly,
Yes.
especially on track
Yes.
on "Gotta Get Up," which I sort of ragged on earlier, and on "Down," which is for me it's a good album, a good track. It's pretty good, but it has Jim Price and Bobby Keys on it, and for my money. Bruce Springsteen sing "Please Don't Yell at Me." I think Bobby Keys is probably the best rock saxophonist that you can find, right? And that's including the fact that David Bowie plays a really good rock saxophone. But if you don't know Bobby Keys, he's the guy who appears on every Rolling Stones album between 1968 and 1972, which is, their peak period. So he's on "Let It Bleed." He's the guy playing saxophone on "Sticky Fingers." He's the guy playing saxophone on every track on "Exile on Main Street." He's also the guy who's playing saxophone on Marvin Gaye's "Let's Get It On." So if you're talking about range of taste, Bobby Keys is everywhere, and he is throwing down on "Down." I'm not sure what number that track is on the album, but he's my other MVP because that sound is unmistakable. In fact, listening to it, I was like, "That kind of sounds like Bobby Keys." Oh shit, it's Bobby Keys. So there you go. I found one. How about you?
I love when musicians have names that are also musical in some way. So Bobby Keys, that's a great
He's Bobby
name.
Keys from Texas.
Oh boy.
He's dead now, but good man.
So my MVP, other than the obvious, is the producer Richard Perry.
Oh, good call.
Because I think it was him with the vision of like making a Beatles-like album in terms of like scope, in terms of ambition, in terms of high quality. Because if you listen to this album and think about quality of production and listen to an earlier Nielsen album, it's night and day. There's no, it's just like, it makes it seem like his earlier albums are just like Harry in a studio recording himself. This seems like there was a lot of discipline and a lot of creativity that was orchestrated that doesn't seem like it could possibly have been orchestrated by Nielsen. At least he had not shown that strength. And he's talented musically, but in terms of production, not so much. So Richard Perry, not only having the vision, but being able to wrangle him to produce something that was in constant conflict with Harry, right? Harry
Yeah.
was constantly having fights with him throughout this, and that they had to middle way through. Wasn't it the story that they like went to lunch to like bury the hatchet?
Yeah.
And they went to high tea.
Yeah.
They went to high tea to bury the hatchet, and then they realized as they were doing it that they were late to record.
Without you, right?
Without you.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, without you. And so they had to run, and he just like went to the studio and just started singing it like right from like this.
No
like,
rehearsal.
This, I know, no rehearsal, just like winged it, and you're like, this is like,
and that's one take. It's just one take.
It's crazy. Somebody with so much talent, and Richard Perry said he was still friends with him, you know, and
yeah,
even
like
did
some. They're best friends.
Yeah, and like I can't imagine, because I told you like last episode I suck at conflict. I wouldn't be able to do this. you just gotta see your best friend self destruct.
Yep.
Everyone around them either enabling him or, you know, not.
It is
at all, and him just like I'm trying, like, and honestly, like, what he did for his career with this album.
He made it.
It made it.
Yeah.
And that's all he could do. He tried it again, and then it was it.
And how do you turn away from something like that?
I don't know.
The funny part you left out about that high tea story is that Richard reminded him what the deal was. He's like, the deal was, if I do this album with you, I'm in control. You listen to what I say. And here he goes, yeah, I remember that. I changed my mind.
I lied. Oh my gosh. So
yeah,
in terms of, I guess I'll segue to my unpopular opinion or hot take from Without You, is that I think he has the definitive version of Without You, and it is superior to Mariah Carey.
Agreed. I don't really love Mariah Carey, though. She's not one of my favorite divas.
I don't know, man. Fantasy, that is a great song. I don't care who you are.
Oh, she's got hits and bops for sure.
Great.
But no.
But, and I think the reason is maybe because she doesn't seem like she's trying as hard in it as Without You.
Ah.
I think in Without You, because I even watched a couple live performances of Mariah just to see how she did it, and it seemed like she was kind of honestly cashing it in. It just seemed like she's like, I can do this without trying. I am so good, and the song is a major hit,
she
and
is.
It's whatever. I mean, I could be just like, these are the three YouTube videos I watched of her sing it, but he is...
Well, we've also seen other instances of that particular line of thinking in terms of Mariah Carey's performances live.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but, you know, and then I already talked earlier about how the first time when I heard it, I thought he was trolling like Father John Misty. That's because he gives so much to, like, it's so authentic and so much more genuine than Mariah Carey's that it feels ingenuine. But when you actually like listen to the rest of his music, I don't know.
So let's talk about
that's
this.
That's my, yeah.
Because I didn't search out a live version of him singing Without You. I didn't want to, because I was afraid. I was thinking about, he's like a vocal trapeze artist, right? You don't expect that he's going to take the risk he's taking, because musically, again, like you, David, I lack some of the vocabulary to describe some of these things. But in terms of the decisions and risks that he's taking, you don't expect him first to take those risks at all. And you don't expect him to make it, but he does it, especially on Without You. He does it seamlessly. So I've purposefully avoided looking at live versions. But my question to you is, would the version of Without You that we get on this album, would it be as good if we didn't have the context of the story that we just talked about?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Which, right, it's like, we're like super English teachers, right? It's like, oh, that book, like, the Gatsby's so boring, but it's like, oh, but, like, if you dig into it and understand everything,
yeah,
then you'll understand the genius of this. And it's like, well, I don't want to have to do that work to appreciate this book.
Yeah, so we'll do it for you.
Right. There you go. Spark notes.
But if he's not running into the studio, if he hasn't done any rehearsal, if he hasn't just tried to do a sort of failed conflict resolution with his best friend slash producer, and they've got to get to the studio and they're already late, oh yeah, got to get up. Would it be the same output? The romantic in me says no. It would probably sound good, but it wouldn't be as transcendent as it is. And maybe we might be saying the same thing about Harry Nilsson as we're saying about Mariah Carey's performance, which is like, I'm that good, I'm giving you this. Although I think he cared more about his artistry than she maybe does. I don't know. I haven't talked to her lately. On that note...
She doesn't get back to our Twitter... what'd you call them?
Our tweeters?
Tweeters.
Your tweeters? Social media doesn't interest me. I don't have like, I don't take photos. I'm not particularly witty. What am I doing on the Facebooks and the Instas? I appreciate you listeners who are following us though on Late to the Party 1989. That's so sweet of you to do that, because I do appreciate being loved. But I don't know.
We have a vibrant community of followers, so
Thanks, Mom.
yeah, it's they're like former students probably, and it's great.
Oh gosh, I'm
No,
out of cold
you guys
brew
are
again. All
wonderful.
right, we got to take one more
So
break, folks. One more break. When we come back, we'll tie up some loose ends. We'll talk to you about listening and purchasing and passing, which you've sort of done already, and give you a preview of perhaps not next week's episode, but certainly the next episode, which David's extremely excited about. But we'll be right back. All right, folks, we're back. Thanks for staying with us. We appreciate it. We appreciate you. For some reason, my phone is ringing. Oh, it's because I thought my dog was supposed to be at the vet now, but in fact, it was this morning.
nice.
We got one last hot take, and we were thinking about this. Maybe we'll make this a regular part of the show. I don't know. We're just figuring it out, listeners. But I was thinking about my sort of uneven review of parts of the album and wondering. The title of our show is Late to the Party, but it's based on the list 1001 albums you have to hear before you die, or you must hear before you die. My question to David and to you listeners, and maybe you'll call in and leave a voicemail, is this an album that I must hear before I die? If I were to die to, if I were on my deathbed tomorrow as a music aficionado, would I? David's making a weird face at me. Would I be sad that I had not heard Harry Nilsson's Nilsson Spielsen? I don't think so. It's really good. I like it a lot. I'll probably listen to it when we're done recording because that's how my brain works. But I don't know if it's that album for me. And I get the sense that maybe it is for you. What do you think?
I think so. I think there's some great songs that you'll be better off for listening to.
Okay.
I think because of Without You, I
Yep.
think that is 100% a track you need to listen
Okay. All
to.
right.
Because I would imagine people that are listening to this, knowing our friends, if they don't know that song, they definitely know Mariah Carey's version.
Oh,
So at least the
certainly.
curiosity is piqued with that.
Yeah.
But no, I really, 1001 is a big number, dude.
Yeah, it
So,
is. It's huge. I mean, we're gonna be, well, yeah, old by the time this is all over.
because we'll finish it. We'll for sure finish it.
Absolutely. What are
Yeah.
you talking
Yeah.
about?
I mean, what else are we doing?
Just rolling
We can't go
along.
anywhere,
Yeah.
so.
God. Oh God, let me out. Okay. Listen, absolutely. Multiple times. As many times as you can stand, listen to it. Purchase, we're split there, yeah? Certainly don't pass
Yeah.
on it. Don't pass on this one. Listen to it.
Hey,
Absolutely.
I know that you live and die by the altar of Pitchfork. So
Adjacent to it, yeah.
they named this number 84 on their top 100 albums of the 70s.
Of the 70s.
Yeah, which the 70s had some of the really
Yeah.
great music. If not the 60s, but the 70s still had
It's jam-packed,
amazing.
yeah.
Yeah, so 84.
Okay. That
It's
seems fair.
of note. All right, so let's see. So yeah, we split on that, and then previewing our next episode, which I'm again super excited about, number 697, because all of you people at home are keeping track, doing a little checklist. I'm
They got
sure
their
you've written it
scorecards.
down.
It's like
Yeah, the
baseball.
scorecards. So number 697, so that puts us in the 90s. So A Tribe Called Quest's
That's a
Low
good.
End Theory,
Yeah.
which is one of my favorite albums ever.
And I've never heard
I
it before, so I'm really
love
excited.
it. Oh man, and this all the stuff I know about Tribe too.
Oh yeah,
I'm really excited. This is
this is your territory. I love it.
so it's gonna be so fun. So in the meantime, you guys can definitely hit us up on Instagram at Late to the Party 1989. And we also have an email, late to the party 1989@gmail.com, if you wanted to, shoot us an email, personal message. We love that.
Drop us
Also,
a line.
you can rate and review us on the podcast apps like Apple Music, Apple Podcasts. So we already have a couple of very wonderful reviews from strangers, complete strangers, and which is just so lovely. And so keep adding us the 5 stars because we are in double digit listenership at this point. So by the time we get to quadruple digit listenership, we could make $15.
And
So I mean,
that's,
fingers crossed. I mean, that then really the world's our oyster at that
hey,
point.
David, that's 2 box combos from Raising Cane's with extra sauce. That's what that is. And can I just say about the Apple podcast review thing? Listening to podcasts as a listener of podcasts, whenever someone says, "Hey, and be sure to check us out and rate us and review us," and I always go, "Yeah, whatever." But now I realize that it's actually that's necessary to grow viewership because it puts us in places on sort of podcast front pages that get us seen by more viewers. So listeners, if you are so inclined, we really would appreciate that bump because it helps us, it exposes us to larger audiences. And now I'm regretting using the word exposed, but we'll move on.
We are wearing robes. So one more thing about all of that is that on, yes, you could definitely listen to Apple Podcasts. A lot of people, it looks like our listeners are listening to it through that app, which is really great, and you can review us on there. But if you listen to us on through the Anchor podcast, which is our links in the bio of our Instagram page, you can get clips from the music, from the song specifically that we are talking about. So that's, just to enhance your listenership, be really great. And also, which is really just something that we'd love, is that if you don't want to type, but you just really want to like give us a nice phone call, let us know what's going on. We don't have a phone number, but we on Anchor, there is a way to leave voice messages. So if you just follow the link in the Instagram at Late to the Party at 1989, you can leave us a voicemail and we can, I don't know, I guess feature it on
Feature,
one of our future
discuss,
episodes.
exalt.
Yeah,
Keep it clean.
challenge.
Keep it clean, though. My grandmother's listening.
But really, if you're like, oh, you did this wrong, or you said this wrong, or you guys are more, I mean, we know that, but like just tell us and maybe we'll challenge will be accepted.
We are
So
lifelong learners.
yes,
Yeah.
that's barf. Okay. So that's all I got. Brandon, you got anything else?
Only gratitude, folks. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. Hopefully, you learned something. And if you didn't learn anything, at least you're able to laugh at how ridiculous we can be. But thanks for joining us at Late to the Party. We'll see you soon. Yeah, Dave?
All right, see you
All right.
later.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.